It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
Welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Happy Narn Year. It's Jeffrey calling from Los Angeles.
And how are you, Jeff?
Well, you know, I tell you, Tim, I think I got over the holidays an email, perhaps you sent over to me, one of the emails that came in from one of our listeners, and I seem to recall that they had a certain disdain for my puns. And for that reason, I dedicate Happy Narn Year to whoever that listener was, and I'll let them just suffer. They don't understand the true essence of great bad puns.
Oh, I think a bad pun is one of the highest forms of humor for myself. Are you an incorrigible punster?
Well, that's kind of private.
Then we shouldn't encourage you.
Oh. I don't believe you did that.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't see that coming 3 light years away.
No, I didn't. And,
all right.
Just
starting the year off great.
Yeah, and for our listeners, yes, we know the intro still says 2006. That's because our first anniversary isn't until February 1st. So we have another we have another couple of shows before we do a new intro.
Okay.
And then we'll be right on target with it.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So how was your holidays, Jeffrey?
You know, Tim, I am I had fine holidays. They were fine. I'm glad it's over. Eager to get back to the real world, which usually is spent generating enough money so I can afford to survive Christmas.
Right. On an annual basis.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. How about you, Summer? How was your holiday?
I actually got some rest.
Yeah?
A little bit of sleep. A little bit more sleep, I should say.
How'd you wangle that one?
4 days of not doing any Farpoint Media stuff?
Yeah, that'll probably took 4 days off and didn't tell us?
It was in the middle there when everybody was out having fun. And so I just, I drank a little bit. I had a beer or two. Yes. Don't look at me like that. Stone Pale Ale is my beverage of choice. Whenever it is not safe to drink the Beelzebuth.
So I think I should, at this point, while you've brought up the subject of drinking, I should probably just publicly apologize for my behavior in the last two episodes of Babylon Podcast. I seem to recall having quite a headache the next morning, and we must have been having a good time that night, huh? Yeah, I hear you snickering back there.
It's okay, Jeffrey. I saved you.
Did I need saving? That's what scares me right there.
you really should listen to that. Really, true.
There's a raw feed out there. I'm sure there's a raw recording of that night. You can listen to it sometime when you feel like it.
No. Been there, done that, and let's not regurgitate it again.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking a cup of tea to make up for our debauchery from last time, so we'll be a little more staid, as it were.
Okay, so you want to hear another Christmas story I got for you here?
Sure.
A little Koshmas story over the holidays. I received, I would say, probably the single greatest Kosh ass-kissing gift I have ever received from Mike Smithwick in San Jose, yep. California. Mike has been elevated to, he is now officially one of the first ones. He knows the secret handshake, and he has, and all of these accolades are because Mike he listened to our show when you and I started space geeking for a little bit there, and I was telling you about how I watch satellites and all that sort of stuff and all that, you know. Yeah. Well, he picked up on that. Let me see if I should read any of this stuff here that he sent us. I appreciate the fact that. So here's what he sent me. Are you ready for this? He sends me, he says, what you have is an aeronautical chart removed from the map book that flew aboard Gemini 5 mission in 1965. It belonged to Pete Conrad, the third and possibly shortest man to walk on the moon. The Gemini 5 flight was the first space flight to last longer than a week to send an astronaut into orbit twice, and the mission that really leapfrogged the Soviets, putting the U.S. ahead in the race to the moon. Plus, he finishes up, plus, I thought this was a good way to kiss up to a Vorlon, and as I say, never miss a chance to kiss up to a Vorlon. Well, kudos on you, Mike, for having your priorities straight, because good God, Tim and Summer sure don't. But I'll tell you what.
Hey, we did for the first couple of shows. That's what I learned from our big holiday special.
So publicly, thank you, Michael. And this is so cool. It really is, guys. I wish you could see this, but you can't.
Oh, you'll have to scan it.
Okay, you officially suck now.
I know.
Yeah, that is quite the gift.
And
wow.
You remember that Jim Carr,
mm-hmm.
yep.
our loyal fan, he hooked me up with the Dodger tickets, and you know I always enjoy doing the podcast from Dodger Stadium, which we'll do again this summer. So, so I'm thinking, you know, as the years go by, it still is good to be the Vorlon.
Yes, indeed it is. And it's good to know the Vorlon, I can say that.
Now, if I can just get the IRS to appreciate the value. Yeah.
How can they be so dense about my so-called church?
I don't remember if I forwarded it to everyone, but there's a site out there that has a chart that has all of the ships, not all of the ships, but a great number of ships from Star Wars, Star Trek, Babylon 5,
yes.
Farscape, and it shows them all in scale.
It's awesome.
And
I love
he has
this thing.
What is it, like 1 pixel is 10 meters or something, or 1 pixel is one, yeah. So
1 meter, 1 pixel is
1 pixel is 1 meter. And to see all of these ships lined up, you know, not really lined up, but arranged, so you see the scale of how big they are compared to other ships. It was kind of amazing. And then I realized, I'm looking through this, looking for all the Babylon 5 ships going, because the station is huge. It's right there, mm-hmm. like at the top. And you see all the little other ships, the shuttles. The Vorlon ships aren't on there. And I was like, whoa. He had the Drak planet killer, but he didn't have the Vorlon planet killer on there. And I was like, oh, no. That was a huge ship.
Oh,
it was a huge ship.
I was going to say I saw that image that you forwarded around, but I bookmarked, and I think I might have sent you the link, Summer. A gentleman named Jeff Russell has a great site,
yes.
in which he compares everything as small as himself and Herbie the Love Bug, all the way up to the Death Star and the Moon and that kind of stuff.
Wow.
So And it's very, very detailed. He's got all the Vorlon ships in there, and he's got the shadow ships. And then all sorts of, if you're an anime geek, there are Macross vessels, which I'm unfamiliar with, but some of you might get it.
Oh, yeah.
Charge out.
Oh, yeah.
And you can really, that'll give you, it even has Ringworld in there, I want to say. I think it's at the highest level out. You can compare everything to Niven's Ringworld. So that's another one. Look, Jeff Russell's Starship Dimensions, which is just a really cool site. So
Excellent.
Can you imagine what life is like when you have time to take on a project like that?
When it's
those
a
truly really gifted people, right?
When
there.
It's when it's a passion, you make time. And that's what I did with Babylon 5 and some other shows.
I've come to the conclusion that's why we're not rich, is we spend too much time doing all this crap and not actually making money.
And just to update everyone on Michael's Babylon 5 marathon viewing.
Oh, my Lord.
I gave him season 4 last Wednesday, was it?
Oh, wow.
And on Sunday, he's calling me, I want season 5 now. Oh my God, I want season 5 now.
That was because the wife was pushing the phone in my hand saying, call Summer now, call Summer now, call Summer now, call Summer
wow,
now.
Wow, you got her hooked.
Oh, yes. She's hooked.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got we'll two converts here. Yeah.
So today I delivered to him season 5 box set and the movie collection. And one of our new reviewers, Tim Adamek from Cover to Cover, said, hey, can you by any chance bring me season 1? Cause, so we have another one.
Yeah, it's the conversion marches on. It's a slowly growing phenomenon, I guess.
Yeah, we love it. We love it.
So, I have a viewing story, too.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
I also, over the holidays, I recently watched my first episode of Babylon 5 on AOL on the Into TV or whatever. What is it?
Yeah.
Into
yeah.
TV?
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah. Cool.
Which I hadn't done yet, so it was relatively easy to navigate and get in there. And you know, the little version was little, and you know, if I went full screen, the resolution was pretty crappy. But there you are, and it was the ads weren't too offensive, and it all moved pretty nice. And I got to say, it's been a long time since I actually watched an episode of Babylon 5, so it's kind of fun. I forget the title. Which one? It was when Lita returned to the station and ousted...
Divided Loyalties?
Divided Loyalties, yeah.
There you go. Thank you. Yes.
Right.
That's it. Yeah.
So what was it like seeing an earlier version of Pat for you?
Well, I don't know. I was there, and it was just, I haven't seen a B5 episode, and I can't even tell you when the last time I saw a B5 episode was. I mean, it's just been forever. So to watch it again, you actually just sort of fall, you just easily kind of fall back into it. And I can't watch the show without thinking of all the other things that I know about went on, you know. So but it's fun to rattle the cobwebs and have those images come out, you know, because that was kind of fun. That's always great.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember the very end of Pee-wee's Big Adventure? As they're at the drive-thru watching the movie, and Pee-wee's ready to go, and Dottie says, don't you want to watch the movie, Pee-wee? And he goes, no, I lived it.
Yeah, that was like when Patty and I and Kim, Holly, and Wayne Alexander, and I think some others, we all went to see Galaxy Quest together.
Wow.
A little strange for sci-fi people to go watch this. Because at the time, we were hardcore onto the sci-fi con thing, you know, and that was our life. Well, without the whole going to outer space and fighting real aliens and all that stuff, but...
Bummer.
Yeah, I know.
Did you have really fruitful dreams after that movie, though? Don't wake me up. I'm fighting.
That was a funny movie.
I'm fighting shadows tonight.
I got nothing.
Is this where we're going, Summer? Is this how the whole year is going to go for us?
No, we actually are starting off 2007 in an auspicious manner by jumping back into what many of the fans want, which is Tim and I, and you if you feel like it, geeking over episodes.
Deep geeking.
That's right. By popular request.
Actually. They
just... hate listening to me.
So, well, on that note, we will take a quick break and come back with some discussion on season 2, episode The Long Dark.
Listen to this. If that sound has you reaching for the fridge to grab a cold one, then you might want to check out my podcast. It's called Speaking of Beer, and in it you explore the beer-niverse with me, Charlie the Beer Guy, and my beer-loving friends. We'll delve into beer history and legend, talk to beer people, and even explore beer-related topics like pub grub, tobacco, and homebrewing. But mostly we'll drink, quaff, sip, and chug the best beer we can find in our never-ending quest for the perfect fermented grain beverage experience. Grab a beer and drink along with us and discover new favorites, rediscover old classics, and expand your beer consciousness. Subscribe at speakingofbeer.com and let's start drinking.
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom, this is Deep Geeking.
I don't think I will ever get tired of that intro. That's just precious.
I tell you, it's perfect. It is perfect. But actually, this is actually more perfect than any of it.
Oh no.
A bookie? We don't need no stinking bookie.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
All bookie
if you're not
all the time.
If you're not tuning into the live feed, you don't know what you're missing.
Yes, you are definitely missing all those interstitial moments where we just kind of cut loose and just have a little fun. Yeah. I don't have any other way to describe that.
Yeah. But now we come to a segment which actually has been getting quite a lot of, let's just say that the fans are starting to get up in arms that we haven't done any deep geeking in a while, Summer.
They're starting to get antsy.
Yes.
Yes. So we are going to more than make up for that by doing a little mini marathon of just geeking.
Yep. Looking forward to it. We've got some interesting episodes coming up.
Yes.
And tonight's episode for Deep Geeking is The Long Dark, in which a derelict spacecraft brings to the station a beautiful passenger and a beastly presence.
Ooh. Yeah,
and one crunchy dead guy.
Yeah, there is that.
There is that.
Summer, what was your general take on this episode? Let's start at the macro and then go down to the micro.
So we're going to start at the overall and then go down to the, here's what happened, here's what we really thought of it?
I think that's probably a good way to handle it.
It was not the strongest of episodes. I understand what they wanted to do with the story to show that there's something larger happening out there. Dwight Schultz's performance was amazing. That was actually fun to watch. But the overall story wasn't as strong, and I don't know if it's because it was early in season 2. It was better than the previous one, but not as strong as the ones that come after.
Sure. So. I think that it tends to get... See, I've gone back and forth on it. I've watched it a handful of times in the hiatus, the holiday hiatus, if you will. And on the one hand, I get the idea that maybe they want to make some of the gathering darkness a little more obvious than it had been in year one, just because things are starting to accelerate. On the other hand, I think some of it is a little heavy-handed. For example, to begin with, let's start at the end, where they trot out the hoary old chestnut, where Ivanova has tracked the projected trajectory of the Copernicus, and it was heading straight for Zaha Doom. you know, the galaxy is a big place. And there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, I know space is empty, okay? But if you were going for the kind of distances that you're talking about, you can't traverse that in a straight line. You're going to have gravitational forces and everything else that's going on with it. So, you know, I mean, we've heard that in so many, you know, cliched science fiction stories.
Mm-hmm.
We've practiced trajectories headed straight for Earth.
Yeah, but they turned it Doom Avenue, so there was no other place they could go.
Right, I guess that's true, yeah.
No, my interpretation of that was it was heading for that quadrant, and they just made a leap of assumption. Well, nothing else is out there. They had to be heading for here.
Yeah, but say that, you know.
Okay.
I mean, we've given some trajectories. You know, we've got three most likely courses, and two of them are headed out into empty space, but one of them happens to be headed toward this place Shakar is talking about. That to me is even a little creepier because it gives you that sense of, you know, well, maybe it is just a coincidence, or mm-hmm. is it? You know, this was almost like beating you over the head with the subtlety of it. You know, and you know, we kind of get back to the scary monster thing. At least this time we didn't get the rubber suit, but I'm not sure the invisible thing was a whole lot better. You know, I think they were trying, at the end there, the firefight, I think they were trying for that. You know, remember Forbidden Planet where the id monster is trying to break through the force field around the Star Cruiser?
Yeah.
That was really cool in Forbidden Planet. I think they were going for that effect this time, but it still looked like a guy in a suit. You know, it's almost as if they said, well, you know, the Ikaran war machine is really, really horrible.
Mm.
You know, what can we do to do it any better? Well, let's make it so you can't see the guy this time. Yeah, okay.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that. I don't know. My first impression was that was the first time we actually saw a creature that was purportedly connected to the shadows. And the only reason we knew that is because we saw the picture in Jakar's book, book of Jaquan. And you saw that it was a creature of energy, and it made you wonder, well, it's like, well, the Vorlons are energy too. Is this creature as strong as the Vorlon? Are they all coming home? Is there nobody at Zahadum? What's going on? But how did they get a picture of it if nobody ever saw it?
Right, right. And actually, the picture, I like the picture because I like the connection,
mm-hmm.
but even still, because the picture was a sort of a pictogram, and you can get the sense that it was a relatively primitive peoples trying to make sense of this creature that they've seen. And so they'd make this you know, demonic-looking drawing, and that was cool. But the guy that you got, you know, the creature that you got a glimpse of in the middle of all the PPG fire, just kind of looked like a guy in a suit, you know? I mean, and part of it was his motions, you know? It had kind of the arms in the air and the head tilted back. It's, oh, I'm dying. And then, of course, it, you know, was very convenient that the body sort of vanished into thin air.
No, there was a puff of orange logic. I mean, brown dirt at the very end.
But, okay, I guess I didn't really catch the dirt part of it.
Well, it did kind of fold on, but you saw like a black residue, and then it vanished.
Yeah.
So you kind of assume there was a body of some kind.
Yeah.
A moment of corporealness before going poof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not working. But having said that, what makes the episode shine is what you touched on. I think Dwight Schultz's performance as Amos the Lurker was just nothing short of phenomenal. Because he was turning it, I don't want to say turning it on and off, it's like one moment he's this raving lunatic, and the next he is as clear-eyed as anybody else, and then back again. And it was just an amazingly deep performance for that, you know, for a guest star role. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the scene that really, to me, when I first saw the episode all those years ago, and I'm watching it unfold, and I'm like, going, oh, okay, you know, Blake Schulte is just kind of doing this real loony thing, okay, you know, sort of an extension of, you know, Alan Mad Murdock and combination of Barkley from Next Generation, you know, kind of the goofy things. But the scene where Garibaldi is telling Amos to take him to the creature, and they just find another lurker rattling around in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
And Garibaldi's like, you know, starting to get mad. It's like, okay, come on, tell me what happened. You know, what was, tell me about the listening post. And he just, the way he delivers the next line, oh, you know, we were just a little intelligence unit. And it was just like so real that all of a sudden everything snapped into place. You know, that all of a sudden it wasn't just this guy being loony. He was truly tortured. You know, and he could talk about certain things up to a point, and then the only way he could deal with it was just basically to be, you know, loony.
Yeah.
So, I thought he did a good job. I also think the actress whose name escapes me right now, who played Maria Cyrus,
Anne Marie Johnson,
did a good job. That's right. She did a very good job of making it was very believable that she was a person who had slept through the last 100 years. You know, there's a great scene in the Zocalo where Dr. Franklin's taking her for lunch, and just she's, as he's talking to her, she's like still looking around at everything, you know, with this expression on her face.
Mm-hmm.
That was just like, you could tell she was trying to make it all register. And that to me, that's a hard thing to perform as well. And she did a great job of that.
The part that I liked was when he was telling her how just a few years after the Copernicus took off, the Centauri came by and we had jump gate technology. And just right. The look on her face, like, my goodness, if we just waited a couple more years,
yeah,
you know, we would have lived together and we still would have been able to explore.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. And Stephen's response to that, no, what you did to courage and bravery and vision, and you know, it was. And I thought there was a good rapport between those two characters. I mean, there was another cliche they were starting to deal with, the whole, you know, doctor involved with this patient
mm-hmm.
thing. But there was definitely a chemistry there. And there were a couple other things in there that helped give you a sense of proportion. And I'm thinking of the scene in MedLab where they're talking about, you know, what happened to Maria's husband and the fact that his organs are missing. This before they were really aware of the creature running around, you know, eating people. And Sheridan says, okay, well, I want a 24-hour watch on her. And it looks at Franklin and goes, and I don't mean you. and he's like, what? You know, and he's getting all defensive. I don't get involved with my patients. And you know, Sharon's like, no, you don't get it. There's this thing running around. You know, something's going on here. And
I don't want you to be the first one it eats.
Right. And just, you know, I mean, he's being the commander. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this is the deal. You know, you already compromised yourself to a certain extent is kind of what he's saying. And it's not that I don't trust you. It's just that we're going to do this the right way. And, you know, and Garibaldi's great, too. As soon as remember the autopsy? And you know, Franklin in the ISO lab saying, well, you know, he died of organ failure. What's wrong with the organs? Well, they're not there anymore. And Garibaldi's instantly, well, let's see, that means he's murdered, and there's only one other person on the ship.
that's the beat cop.
Exactly. And it was great. You know, it wasn't hokey. It was perfectly in character. You know, and he's ready to go. He's like, okay, well, you know, it's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why assume the big conspiracy or the big mystery when the obvious sometimes really is the answer?
Right. Yeah. Another scene that I really enjoyed was the scene in the council chambers where the Markab is describing the creature, basically. And this, see, to me, this was a scene where it started to tie in the bigger mysteries of the shadows and the ancient minions calling, because that's what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And Jakar, of course, is wrapped with attention. He's like, no, I want to hear this, because this is fitting in with his observations and thinking. And Sheridan is willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, he's saying, all right, you know what? I may not believe it, but you believe it, and I have to take that seriously, so we're going to deal with that. And then the Markab takes one step too far and says, you know, well, if you don't take care of it, Captain, we're going to take care of it. And Sheridan is immediately in his face. It's like, no, you don't understand. I'm in charge here. We're doing it my way. And if there's anybody else who thinks about doing it any way other than my way, there's going to be even bigger trouble.
And see, and that I don't know, maybe that was supposed to be a setup to show how, you know, stubborn and direct the Markab can be, just, you know, for the later episode, Confessions and Lamentations. But
right.
that came off a little forced to me, because we had never seen one of the League members get, shall we say, forceful with any of the Alliance.
Well, no, that's not true. I think in looking at Deathwalker,
Deathwalker was an alien who had affected all of their planets. You're threatening a human, saying, you know, if you don't take care of this problem, you know, we're going to take care of her too. Like, you're threatening to kill another human in front of the commander of the ship, who's human. Hello?
Yeah, I guess it didn't bother me as much as it apparently has bothered you, because to me that was just like, I just saw it as somebody trying to maybe puff up their position, you know? And you know, I don't want to say trying to see how far he could go, but, you know, trying to get a little swagger going on, and he's just not a big enough dog to run with the big dogs. And Sheridan lets him know that in no uncertain terms.
True, but I guess I thought he could have been a little bit more helpful, since they knew that certain creatures of darkness were being, you know, called out of their hibernation.
Right.
They could have given it a hint, you know. They knew it wasn't her, and because, gee, she's not thousands of years old. I don't know. I guess
right.
I guess that
right.
whole situation could have been handled better. Now, if they had threatened to, I don't know, expose that there was a danger on Babylon 5 that nobody was doing anything about, just make it a PR nightmare instead of trying to make it this personal, you know, bravado thing. Who knows?
Right.
I think that would have gone over better.
I got you. So your issue there is more with how it was written.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can see that. But yeah, that didn't bother me so much. I just really like it. I just like watching Bruce Boxleitner and Sheridan when he gets up on his high horse like that. And then of course afterwards, you know, talking with Ivanova, oh, you handled that really well. And he goes, that bad, huh? So, you know, you definitely get the flawed commander in there. And there's, you know, one other, you know, little funny in there. What's your plan? Don't get killed. Great plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So, you know, overall, you know, passing fair episode, you know, well worth watching it for Dwight Schultz's performance. And, you know, otherwise, you know, yeah, kind of, you know, it kind of gave, breathed a little life into an otherwise cliched storyline.
Mm-hmm. So. And I understand why it was there. I do.
Yeah.
Because you wanted to show, like I said earlier, you wanted to show from a larger scale of these minions of the shadows being called home to prepare. You know, they're being pulled from their secret places so they don't get, you know, accidentally discovered.
Right.
Before they're ready, before the shadows
right.
are ready. And
right, but the summons is going out.
Right. So why Why didn't the Shadows send like a cab or a limo for that guy? Why did he have to hitch a ride?
Because he's the guy, he's the guest that shows up and doesn't leave and leaves the empties lying around on the coffee table and doesn't use the ashtray. Well, and the Shadows would just really rather not have him along for the party. But, you know, he kind of heard the invitation.
No, that doesn't work because we know full well that the Shadow vessel that was buried on Mars, you know that was a weekend bender gone way too long. Yeah, they went and picked that guy up. They went and picked that guy up, and it was like, "Hey, it's 2 weeks? That's the Shadow of equivalent of somebody being put on a bus in their shorts and left in Tijuana." Okay, this guy, you know, he's the cousin from the country who you don't know is a cousin who shows up on your doorstep and you go, "Oh man, who are you related? How are we related? Who's your whose cousin? What?" Yeah, so
you married your cousin? What?
So you gotta wonder, did the Shadows really, really want this guy? Because he'd been hiking 10 years already.
Yeah. Right.
And he was nowhere close to being home. By the time he got home, the party would have been over.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's what I have a problem with, because it would have taken him far longer to get home than things ended up happening in real time. So they could have sent they could have sent him a limo or a cab, gypsy cab even.
If you want to think about it, and if you're trying to look for logical terms in the universe.
Zaha Doom is that bad
Aquaman
part of town. The cabs don't run there. That's what it all is.
Yeah, right.
But they live there.
I was going to say, Aquaman summons his animal friends. It was just as the call went out, other things responded that, may not have been what the Shadows were necessarily. I mean, it's obviously they were targeting particular stashes, if you will, on Mars, which Garibaldi saw. The one on Ganymede or Callisto, was that buried there too, and they found it? I can't remember it.
That one they found and they tried to keep, and that was an accident.
Right. So the point is that they buried battle crabs all across the galaxy, and there's some of definitely trying to get those things dug up, and maybe it's just that it's like the dog whistle. You're going to call your dog, but you're going to call some of the neighbor's dogs too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I'm with you in terms of storytelling and writing. Yeah, it doesn't hang with what's going on in the rest of the universe. Like you said, the general story there is to give the sense of events starting to pick up pace and bigger things happening than we've only gotten hints about before, but. Like I said earlier on, this is really, hitting you over the head with the subtlety of it.
Mm-hmm. It was this was a freelance merc. This was a merc, and he just happened to see the ad in the paper going, "Oh man, I haven't worked for those guys in years. I need a good paying gig. I'm gone." That's what it was.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
It works. It works for me.
Okay.
Anyway, any other thoughts?
On this one, no.
Yeah. I pretty much have said all I have to say about it too.
I just like how we have one more chapter in setting up Dr. Franklin as the shipboard Casanova. it just happens that way,
Yeah. Now I'll say this: what's interesting is going forward, looking at the next 3-4 episodes, is that they become very much not focused on the looming Great War. So it's almost as though this episode is starting to get you geared up for something coming, and then nothing really happens for a while. So. In that sense, it kind of works in the overall arc, because you know, the next episode is Spider in the Web, which is a Psycore episode, and then there's Soulmates, and I think Race Through Dark Places after that. So now, you know, we're dealing with this other stuff going on. So in a sense, the Shadow War almost starts taking a back burner. And so it's the great misdirection, if you will. You know, the magician says, look over here. And so you're not paying attention to everything else that's going on. So
basically he shows you the rabbit and then does some other stuff to make you forget about it until later.
Right. Okay. Right. So that's kind of how this is. I think this episode works in the overall arc of year two.
I think that happened to me in Tijuana too.
They showed you the bottle and then did the other stuff and then hit you over the head with it.
Showed me this thing. It looked like a rabbit. And I don't know where I ended up after that.
Come get the good beer. Anyway, I think that'll do it for our episode geeking for today.
Yes, I think so.
Cool, Owen. We'll be back right after this with some listener feedback.
Oh, yeah.
This is Bob. Before, Bob relied on the internet to enhance his geek status. After using Technorama for natural geek enhancement, Bob is rolling his 20-sided die, reciting Holy Grail lines, and answering Star Trek trivia with the best of them. And he has a happy missus at the home, too. Technorama for natural geek enhancement. Only available at chuckchat.com.
Hi, this is Julie Caitlin Brown, the top of Babylon 5, and you're listening to the Babylon 5 podcast.
And coming back, we're starting to get a lot more listener feedback, which I enjoy.
Yes, and we got quite a number of emails over the holiday, and I've done the best I possibly could under the circumstances to try to respond to people and pull some out for the shows, but if you haven't heard from us and you've sent us an email, don't take it personally that you haven't gotten a response. Just that, you know, with the holidays, I don't ever get to sit down at the Mac. So there it is. But we do have we have some great voicemails, and I've got a couple emails here to read.
Okay.
And, so let's get it started.
Summer, Kim, Fantakosh, Yarso, and I'm forgetting somebody. Oh, Mike. Hi, Mike, too. You know, I'm really enjoying, this is Thomas from Flagstaff, I'm enjoying Grandma Got Ran Over by a Volarlon, Violent Narn. These are all great and amusing tales, but I'm concerned that they may be leading to a place the shadows dwell, a very dark place, and a very dangerous place, one that, let me explain it in four words. Star Wars Holiday Special. Enough said.
Oh, my.
Well, B. Arthur's still alive, but I don't know about Art Carney. I guess we can get Wilford Brimley to sit in for him.
Have the Vorlons toasting marshmallows and roasting chestnuts.
Oh, that's a dangerous, dangerous thing.
Santa Claus versus the Vorlons.
And now see you saying something like that.
Santa coming out of hyperspace and being taken on by a shadow
remember?
Ship. Yeah.
All right, quick, what movie is this from? The Day the Reindeer Died. You've been a good boy this year, Lee. Santa's gonna remember that.
I don't know that one.
That's a fake commercial from the opening of Scrooge.
Scrooged, yep.
Lee Majors Save Santa. It's, dude.
The night the reindeer died.
I'm sorry. Segway. Next voicemail.
This is Jarsto from the Netherlands, bringing you the intergalactic How Kosh Was Poisoned conspiracy theory. This will probably spark major deep geeking, but let's start with the evidence first. I submit for your consideration 5 pieces of evidence. Exhibit A. Kosh tries to shake hands with the false Sinclair in the pilot. Exhibit B. There are some indications that the wind swords had or have links with the shadows, Part of this evidence is the fact that they sheltered Deathwalker. Exhibit C. We see Morden in Babylon 5 CNC. Exhibit D. Cross rescues Sheridan when Sheridan jumps from the core shuttle. Exhibit E. There are rules between the Shadows and the Vorlons. A direct strike at a Vorlon would almost certainly be a violation of the rules by the Shadows. From this evidence we can draw the following conclusions. Exhibits A and D show us that the Vorlons can maintain some sort of corporeal form that would be subject to poisoning like any corporeal being. Exhibit B means that the Windswords might have had access to technology that would lock the Vorlon into this corporeal form permanently. If anyone would have technology suitable for that purpose, it would be the Shadows. Exhibits C and E combined leave us with two options. Either this was an attack not sanctioned by the Shadows, which would anger them for endangering the rules between them and the Vorlons and possibly inviting retaliation, or it was a sanctioned attack, but the Shadows would certainly not wish it to be traced back to them, again due to the possible consequences. In the first case, Morden's presence aboard Babylon 5 might be explained as an undercover mission, tasked to prevent the death of Kosh if the humans should fail on their own. A position in CNC would certainly be suitable for him to keep an eye on things. In the second case, Morden might have been sent aboard to make sure no link could be traced back to the Shadows after everything was over. Again, procuring a position for him in CNC would make sure he was well placed to execute any steps that might be necessary. While there is no way we can say for certain which of the two options is the more likely, my personal belief is that it's more likely to have been a Shadow operation of some sort. The principal evidence to support this theory is Morden's presence. While this can be explained in a scenario of a non-sanctioned attack, it is far more likely in a sanctioned attack. After all, this would give the Shadows plenty of notice to have Morden aboard at the proper time. An unsanctioned attack would require them to scramble at the last minute, and would make it far less likely for them to be able to procure an Earth Force position for Morden.
One small problem with that. You can't deep geek over something that has a flawed premise. Morden was right. Never in CNC.
Right.
So
Ed Wasser was in
yes.
CNC.
The actor.
Ed Wasser,
yes.
Ed Wasser had Pat Tallman's haircut.
Yes, we did notice that. But no, since the Morden character was never in CNC, this is an extremely flawed premise.
Maybe it was Morden's good twin in CNC.
I'm just impressed you followed that. I need the flow chart.
Well, the other thing where I think he takes a leap of logic is Windswords having access to Shadow technology, and he points out the link between the Windswords and Deathwalker. There's no indication that Deathwalker was in league with the Shadows in any way, shape, or form. If you recall that episode, she was just basically a nasty bitch.
Yes.
And she did it all on her own. I mean, she scores big points for originality. but I don't think she was taking any cues from the Shadows. So whereas the Windswords had, and as Lanier admits later on in the episode that the Windswords came to the Minbari through the Grey Council with all kinds of terrible weapons that they had gotten with the aid of Jadur. There's never any indication that that goes any further. So there you are, still. Yeah.
Yeah. I also have to go back and double check the timeline. But what year did the Icarus expedition take off and disappear?
At that point, it would have been a year before the.
It would have been at the same time.
It would have been contemporary. So
yes.
There's no way of knowing whether or not Morden would have been aboard the Icarus or been in a place where he could have been assigned to CNC.
But if he were in CNC, he would have been in Earth Force. If he were in Earth Force, he would not have been assigned to the Icarus, which was a civilian corporate expedition.
Right.
He would not have been on the Icarus. And the Icarus, I was under the impression that the Icarus expedition was taking place or had already disappeared by the time the gathering started, the episode of the gathering was on.
Yeah, like you said, we'd really have to get the timeline, because if you think about it, let's work backward from it. When Sheridan comes on board and points of departure in 2258, okay, he mentions that Anna's already been dead for 2 years. So then you work backward, 2257, which is, of course, you know, the first season, Signs and Portents, that's 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then it's another year prior to Midnight on the Firing Line that the events of the gathering take place.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. It was
that's
20...
pretty much established. So, yeah. So right, at that point, there's no... I mean, at that point, now you're talking about if what Sheridan tells us is to be believed, and there's no reason it shouldn't be, then the Icarus Expedition is concurrent with the events in the gathering.
Yes.
So, right, so there we go. It's not Morden and CNC. It's as evil as his good twin Borden.
I just think that my hat's off to Yarstow yet once again for coming up with a whole new persona as he becomes his very own Perry Mason in mm-hmm. this case, with his Exhibit 1, Exhibit 2, Exhibit 3. And
you notice that he's a good guy.
He's
a good, because he didn't sign off. He just stopped his...
Yep. Yeah, I just think it's...
That's because he's paying for Skype now, too.
No, I just
all right, let's find out if the next voicemailer is a good guy or a bad guy.
Okay.
This is Jarstow from the Netherlands. First of all, let me congratulate you on the selection for the clip shows. I really enjoyed them. Aside from the urge they gave me to listen to the 44 odd hours of podcasts the clips came from again. Good luck with the 2007 podcasts, and may all three edges of your sword be sharp this year.
Wow. Cool.
That's thank you, very Jarstow. Nice.
I think we found our volunteer for next year's gathering of clips.
Why not put him to work?
I was going to say,
start
I went
now.
Through all 44 shows. And my brain
yeah, good on you for doing that too.
it was fun. Let me. I mean, it was really. It was a bigger task than I had originally thought. So I think Jeffrey, if you want to suggest early on, we should start earlier. But, you know. Yeah. I was always the kid who was doing the book report the night before, so yeah. Anyway.
So what began as a labor of love turned into an OCD episode.
Yeah. But no, it was good fun to hear all the stuff. And as we commented during the holiday show, it was hard to pick out just little bits because there was so much great stuff in there. I mean, we could have played Snack Man's entire interview again, and I would have been happy. You know, I mean, it was just like, you know, where do you start? Where do you stop? Well, you don't.
Because he didn't.
That's right. Yeah. John Iacovelli was another one.
Yeah.
Hi, John. 45 minutes later.
You got to go now, John. Stop.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going. This is costing us money.
Okay.
Hey, Babylon Podcasters. This is Trampus from The Signal again. Just want to make one quick comment on the show. I was hoping that Mike might become more of a regular part of the show. I know he functions as engineer, and that's all cool, but I've noticed he's had a lot of great insight, and he also offers sort of the newbie perspective, if you will, which I think would be great too. So just hoping that he would join in a little bit more on the deep geeking, and I think you all are doing a fantastic job. So keep up the good work, and I'll talk to you later. Have a good one. Bye.
Mike who?
Oh.
Nine podcasts. I do nine shows. I don't need 10.
I don't know, Mike. You're getting sucked in. Slowly but surely.
I actually know what the hell you're talking about now, so it's hard not to.
Not to jump in? Well, yeah. You can feel free to jump in if you want.
Yeah, jump in. Just make sure you push record at the beginning and stop at the end. That's the priority. You want to yammer in between, go ahead, bud.
Actually, I think it'd be fun to get Lori involved on occasion.
Maybe. We'll see. Oh. She'll see if we can pull her in. You never know.
We'll see.
One more and call it good?
Sure.
Yep, sure.
Hey, gang. This is Matt in Michigan. Finally with a message short enough to leave his voicemail instead of the several pages long email that I usually seem to send. Just listen to show 47. Sorry, show 46. Don't even know what day of the week it is. Show 47 is up next. Show 46 is what I'm calling about. My goodness. Well, I have to say that although the conversation with Mr. Downs was not the most informative, it's probably the most entertaining interview I've heard so far. That was a blast. That's really all I have to say today. I really like Yarstow's segment. Yes, Yarstow. Keep up the great work. Oh, and the rest of you. Yeah, great job, too. In all seriousness, Yarstow's growing segment is a lot of fun, but it wouldn't have been possible without all the great work that the Babylon podcast crew does. So thanks, all, and have a happy new year.
What I'd like to know is why we should be interested in Yarstow's growing segment. That's rather personal.
Somehow you lost this show. I'm not exactly sure when it happened. Yeah.
It's not so much a growing segment as it is a hostile takeover. Kind of going on.
Like I said, fans talk back.
There you go.
Well, you know.
And wait till we start bringing in the rest of the in-studio audience.
Yeah, That's going to be crazy, but I think it'll be fun, too.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have like, applause signs in there.
Sure.
Hey, that's a great idea. I don't have that yet.
You still haven't gotten your big, bright on-air sign yet.
That's because they want $220 for them. They're insane.
Really?
Yes, I'll make my own. Screw that.
You can
get
one for less than that.
That's right. I need my mixer first. Screw that.
Okay, we'll get the mixer first, then we'll get the on-air sign. How's that?
Yeah, I'm going to get my first piece of the mixer probably next week, I think.
Sweet.
We finally got enough in to get a part of it. Not the big piece yet, but it's part of it.
It's the little sticker that tells you what's
going on. That's right. It's the extension cord.
Okay.
Do we have emails, too?
Yeah, we got a couple emails here.
Okay, quickly. You're running out of time.
Okay, here we go. Well, this will be a quick one. The first one's quick. They're both quick. So here we go. Katrina from Glenside, PA, sends us an email. Tim, Summer, Jeffrey, I just finished listening to episode 46, and all I can say is it was like an auto accident. Sickly compelling. There was very little B5 content aside from what Jeffrey couldn't tell us about the Lost Tales and the voicemails at the end, but it was still a very enjoyable listen, especially when Tim was trying ever so hard to sneak some B5 content into Robin's quote-unquote interview. Anyway, keep up the good work. No matter how off-track the show seems to go, it is still compelling to listen to. We got quite a number of emails and posts on the blog of a similar vein about our episode with Robin Aikens Down, and they were all like, I don't believe what I just heard, but it was still a lot of fun to listen to. So, that Robin's a hit. I don't know how he's going to live up to that when he's, you know, like, all together there.
Can you swing by his storage unit and have him come on again sometime soon?
Yeah. We should do a show from the storage unit.
There you go. I get a nice echo effect in here. You never know.
One last email here. This is from Martin Parrott. I just watched the let's try it again for all our Narn-speaking friends. I just watched the Modern Marvel show about snow. This is one Jeffrey talked about. I love the Modern Marvel shows, and this one was right up there with the best ones. See, Jeff? To bring this back to Babylon 5, I was careful and watched the snow show looking for Santa Kosh footprints, but never saw any. This begs the question, does Kosh actually have any feet? Great show, guys. Keep it up. Well, I don't think you were going to see any Kosh footprints in the snow, because if you really watched the snow, there was no snow.
But Kosh was there.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was. So what is, so what's the verdict, guys? Does Kosh have feet?
He's got roller skates.
Yeah, I think if you still look, this is if you look at the Lurker's Guide, the definitive Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, which told everything you ever needed to know about Babylon 5 12 years ago, 11 years ago, whatever it was, it still says that Kosh is animatronic. I'm thinking that means no feet.
Mm. You see the new attraction at Disney World, Hall of Willard.
That's awesome.
He's got a hover skirt.
Hover skirt, there you go.
I think it was a lot of little people under there carrying him along, bearing him on a litter, like the royalty that he is.
How easy the job of being Kosh would have been had I had one of those cool jetpacks that they used on the Rose Parade. Did you see that?
Well, no, I missed it. I don't believe
you didn't.
Did you
no,
didn't
I
watch
know
the parade?
The whole 501st was on there. No, I didn't. I didn't watch the parade.
You didn't see the stormtroopers either?
No, I didn't. You know, slap me with a.
Yeah, TD was on there. One of our Farpoint's own was in that parade.
TD 0013 was. He said, "You can see me in the second row with the dented helmet."
I've seen Kevin's outfit so many times. I know his uniform. So.
Tim, you really are a Scrooge.
Oh, I'm horrible. I'm glad that this whole holiday thing.
Really? We didn't do Christmas this year, but we even had a tree.
Well, we got a tree.
Daddy, why don't we have any lights on our house? Ouch, man.
Yeah.
They're going to call child services on you. That's going to come back to bite you in the future when she grows up.
That's almost 10 pounds of veal. What are you talking about? That's a great present.
Another Scrooge line.
No, we're not going to watch the parade.
Like, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I have to stop Christmas from coming.
Wow. Okay. So essentially what I'm hearing here is that in season 2 of the Babylon podcast, Tim is actually going to turn out to be one of the shadows, isn't he?
Yep.
There it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, Summer, get us out of here.
All right. If you want to contact us, you can send us an email at babylonpodcast@gmail.com or call in with your very own voicemail message. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year of the Great War came upon us all.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.